Mushrooms have been used as a food for a long, long time and as a medicine for as long as 4,000 years. They can heal. They can also be used for food production, obviously, and for environmental protection as well. And I think a lot of their uses are still unknown to many, many people. Larry Mueller here. Thanks again for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Today, our guest is going to tell us about organic mushroom farming and the research he's done to develop ideas that that actually help humankind. Trad Cotter, microbiologist, professional mycologist. He's an organic gardener. Been using tissue culturing, been collecting native fungi in the southeast and cultivating both commercially and experimentally for more than 20 years. And he's the author of Organic Mushroom Farming and Mycoremediation. And Trad, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks to you, Larry, for having me.
Oh, I'm really pleased to have you on. I'm reading your book and going through it. That was really a fascinating book. But I was fascinated by how you got started in mushroom farming. And to me, it's like so often I've interviewed people who by chance wind up with the profession of their lives. And in a way, that's kind of how you got started.
That's a true story, and I'm glad you touched on that, because the introduction, most people skip the introduction to books, and everybody should read it, because I tell this story when people come on a tour, and I still can't believe I'm here, you know, doing what I'm doing, and not to spoil it for anyone, but, you know, I got hired on a tour as a walk-in, and that's like walking onto a pro football team with no experience, you know what I mean, and becoming a quarterback, so I just... It was a very nice twist of fate, and something happened during that tour that just affected me. It was like a virus, and I'm spreading the viruses, you know?
Well, and you now have what's got to be the sort of premier farm for mushrooms. It's Mushroom Mountain, you call it. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, I started Mushroom Mountain when I left that farm. I only stayed at the original farm for like a year and a half, 2 years, and I had a vision of a farm that was more interpretive, that had more character, meaning, you know, nature trails and tours, more displays, a lot more research and things going on. So, it took a long time to get here. You know, the slow track was learning... You know, the hard way was there aren't books to teach this, you know. Yeah. I mean, there's cultivation guides, but, you know, just going out into the woods and studying fungi and then trying to cultivate mushrooms one by one, especially, you know, things that have never been done before, interested me. So I have just been collecting lab gear over the years and just incrementally working towards this vision of a place that we finally have now. And it was... one stepping stone after the other, and now we've got a beautiful facility, and, you know, it wasn't easy getting here, but now it's really easy for anyone to come in who's interested in studying fungi. You know, we've got a long list of kids and students who want to work for us, because now's the opportunity to explore the fungal kingdom using our experience.
Well, and we're talking here, we're not talking about a couple of pounds of mushrooms here that you produce. On the production side, we're talking thousands of pounds.
Right, and we have this new facility we're opening up here. We've been under construction for about a year, and our lab, my wife and I, Olga, spent about $250,000 just on the lab, Larry.
Yeah.
And most people buy a nice boat or go on vacation, and I think we're just putting all our chips on mushrooms right now, because we feel strongly and believe that they have a good future, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, during this hour. But, we've got 42,000 square feet, and we have the ability to grow. I mean, it's just about, we can grow as many mushrooms as we want in that space. You know, we can do, our production goal for this summer, later this summer, is about 2,000 pounds to 3,000 pounds a week.
Yeah. So A ton and a half a week.
It's a lot of picking.
That's a lot of picking. And I'm really enjoying your book. And the science that you talk about in the book itself, along with all the very practical information here, describe the book is titled again, Organic Mushroom Farming and Mycoremediation, Simple to Advanced and Experimental Techniques for Indoor and Outdoor Cultivation. That's the subtitle. Trad Cotter, our guest today, is the author of that book. And man, you've put together a dandy book.
Well, I give credit to Chelsea Green, the publisher, too, because I've been threatening to do a book since I was young. You know, 22, 23, I look back, I still have the manuscripts or the outlines where I would just outline the book. And it sat in a box, and it traveled around with me for, you know, 15, 16 years. And then, but see, it was just another mushroom book. There were already mushroom cultivation guides out. They're difficult to match or, you know, give a one-up on. So it really took getting here, you know, back at the farm and really delving into fungal culture and what it can do, you know, and also working for an organic landscape design company to make ends meet. I kind of shifted, and I had this something just evolved, and I started to change the contents of my original manuscript, and then Chelsea Green came along, and that's an interesting story, because a friend of mine who writes or wrote for Chelsea said, you know, if you're going to write a book, you have some really interesting information, and I think that would be a good match for you. So I looked up their website, and I was down in Florida on vacation at the in-laws' house, and it was Christmas Eve, and everyone was asleep, and I stayed up by the tree, got on the computer, and I submitted my book. I submitted my book proposal on Christmas Eve in 2012, and I just tell everyone, I said that I just felt like I was ready, and I wanted to push it out to sea and see if it came back. And sure enough, they called back 3 weeks later and said, "We want you to go ahead and get under contract." And but even the original titles and the original table of contents that I sent, I think it completely changed, because as I was writing for them, I was lecturing and traveling everywhere in the United States, and I really got to see what people wanted, you know. And it was like doing stand-up comedy. You know, I could try the material, and then I would go back and I would keep writing, and eventually my editor, you know, I would keep going over the deadlines, and the editors were like, please, Trad, please stop, you know, quit, you know, we have to stop at some point. So it turned out wonderful. They distilled everything down into a cover-to-cover read that's, you know, really digestible, and you probably came away with that, you know. I have a strong science background, and those are not good texts to read. They're not fun.
No.
And they're chewy is what I call them. They're just, so what I've done was I've just changed the language around, you know, created scenarios and analogies and stories where everyone can understand, and just read it from cover to cover, and, you know, hopefully you'll wake up a mushroom expert.
Talking about the endless possibilities of mushrooms today with our guest, Trad Cotter, who is a microbiologist, professional mycologist, and author of Organic Mushroom Farming and Mycoremediation. I have to always think about how to pronounce that properly. I hope you'll join in with your questions about mushrooms. We have some comments already. I've been kind of sitting on here. But the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And mycoremediation, people are going to say, well, what the heck is mycoremediation? And talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I don't want that word to scare anybody away from getting the book, because it's we did an introduction to this field of mycology. All that is, if you break it down, is using fungi for cleaning up environmental pollution. And that's on a home scale. That's on a farmer scale. It could be in an industrial scale. But most of this book is geared exclusively for the homeowner or the farmer who might want to recycle, you know, their paper and cardboard at home. You know, 30 to 40% of paper and cardboard comes out of the homes, and 60 to 80% of paper and cardboard comes out of the businesses. So there's a good way of reducing that and reducing landfill waste. There's also ideas on how to remediate very small chemical spills, like if you're changing your oil in the car, and, you know, hey, it happens. It drips out. There's things like that, and there's solutions. But I think what I'm most proud about is the chapter on the fungi in the classroom for the students.
Oh, I love that chapter.
Oh, my gosh. And see, that's what was missing. That's one of those chapters I told you that was just had to be added that makes the book a gem to teachers, because we have a lot of homeschooling groups and tours coming through our facility. And when I get done with the tour, you know, it's about an hour and a half, and the kids are just having a great time. They're just having fun, and they're all intrigued. But the teachers come up and say, where is this information in the books? And I said, well, it doesn't exist in the standards. So what I've done was I've taken all the coolest things about fungi, and I created a teaching rubric from kindergarten all the way up to collegiate, meaning almost a postdoc. There's many lessons and advice there for teachers and students to create projects and even science fair projects. I don't know. Yeah, I would have killed for this book when I was 8 or 10 years old. It would have just been like a magic book, you know?
Well, you know, I looked at that chapter and I thought, oh man, there are a lot of teachers who are going to love this chapter, because it's really something probably quite a bit different from what most of them would ever be doing.
Yeah, and it is a cultivation book, but the middle, that's the front of it. The middle section is like a buffet.
Yeah.
And once you hit the middle section, you can do just about anything with all the little mini lessons that are in there. But what I liked is this book is designed to get us forward in the science. You know, we need students and students in these age groups, you know, elementary school, intermediate up to high school, to be working on more fungal-oriented solutions, because they're not getting that. I mean, they're coming out of college, if they even take a major in a biology, biological degree, they're getting all bacterial studies.
Yeah.
So there's no fungi at most universities. There's some in Wisconsin, and, you know, Dr. Tom Volk, and then there's in Blanchette, and there's Penn State, Cornell, and Duke. But, you know, by far, you know, the fungi are just not being taught in schools at all.
Well, it's really great to have you with us today, Trad. I'm really appreciating the book itself and talking with you about mushrooms, and I want to get our listeners involved as well. And Susan in Milwaukee, I hope you can hold on here. I think you've got a good question. You may have a question as well. Just call in at 1-800-642-1234. You can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. Post a question or a comment there. We have a few already. And email us at talk@wpr.org. And we'll be back with our guest, Trad Cotta, right after the news. You may know that mushrooms are a good source of protein, but would you ever think that a fungus could help regions of the world in poverty or regions that have experienced a natural disaster? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest today is talking about his experiences cultivating mushrooms and how farming mushrooms can change the world. And he's going to share some information about his book title, Organic Mushroom Farming and Mycoremediation. Our guest today is Trad Cotter. And Trad, thank you again for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time.
And thank you ahead of my visit, coming to see you soon, right up in West Bend.
Yeah, talk about, you've got some events coming up, and let's talk about that West Bend event.
That is at Mother Earth Fair. And there's a few of them scattered around the United States, and they're wonderful events. They are all-encompassing for homesteaders, farmers, researchers, herbalists, holistic medicine. This is the ticket to get, and it's super cheap to get in. I can't think of anything that costs $25 that lasts all day.
Yeah.
that's legal.
Yeah, absolutely. So, again, the specifics are, it's at?
West Bend. It's at the fairgrounds. I'm not sure exactly where. You go to MotherEarthNews.com, and you'll be able to find it. And there's over 150 workshops.
Yeah, it's amazing. Number. And what will you be speaking on?
Well, I will be speaking on mushrooms, of course.
Obviously,
and,
yeah.
Specifically, I have some really intense lectures on medicinal mushrooms and how to make tinctures and extracts, and our research on novel antibiotics. And that's probably something we should talk about in a minute. But cultivation for everyone, which is something that sounds like you might want to go to that.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lectures on mycoremediation, which is how to clean up your own little messes, pollutants, and things around your home or farm using fungi, which is easy. And one of my favorites is I am teaching one of the children's programs to get them interested in fungi.
Oh, wow. Lots of really fun things. And that, again, where should they go for the more information? There's a website, obviously. We have a link to it on our Facebook page. Yes, we do, but...
It is Mother Earth Fair, and if you search that out, and you'll find it. Just click on the Wisconsin banner, and then you'll be able to pull up all the programs and the speakers, and there's cheese making, artisan breads. I mean, you name it, it's there.
Dawn in Wauwatosa has a question. Let's go to Dawn. Hi, thanks for calling.
Thanks. I'm wondering what causes a mushroom in its development to be either poisonous or not poisonous. What is it about its growth that would take on one character or the other?
Okay. Nothing happens during the actual growth. Okay. A mushroom is either poisonous or not. Now I'll go back to that. There is one exception. This is genetically programmed to be poisonous. So this is a species rule, where a destroying angel, let's say, is one of the deadliest mushrooms in the world. If you grow that in a lab, it's going to possess amatoxins, which can kill you. So it's not an environmental factor. It just produces those compounds naturally as part of its life cycle. Same thing with some poisonous mushrooms. But the good news is there's not that many deadly mushrooms and poisonous mushrooms in the United States compared to the thousands that are out there. So usually it's by a mistake of a lookalike. Okay?
There we go.
Yeah. You can get sick from an edible mushroom if it's spoiled, and that would be the only way that you can make a good mushroom poisonous would be, and nobody would eat a rotten, soggy mushroom anyway. I hope not.
No. And you can get, I mean, if you eat, like anything else, if you eat too much, you can suffer a little bit. I've seen that happen to people who get a mushroom that they just love and they find it and then they, instead of just eating a normal amount, eat like what three people probably should have eaten.
Right.
And then, you know, get a tummy ache from it. So
there's also, I should point out to the listeners that you should cook all mushrooms, and not many people know that.
Yeah.
And that decreases the allergic reactions and some kind of gastrointestinal reaction you might have, because mushrooms are really made of chitin. It's like a mineral. So if you cook them, they become more digestible and more bioavailable. Okay?
Thanks, Don. Tony in Athens, thank you for calling. Hi.
Thanks for the program, Larry. I'm learning a lot. I'm a family farmer who's growing mushrooms to diversify I have available at the farmer's market and my income. I'm growing wine cap, shiitake, and oyster mushrooms, and I've had early success with oyster mushrooms. But lately, a lot of blue mold has taken over my pasteurized straw, and it's sort of making it, limiting the production of my oysters, Italians and gray doves and pohus. And I'm wondering, what's the problem? Is it inconsistent pasteurization, environment? I'm struggling to pinpoint the reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would just go back and look at each one of those. Every one of those is a factor. So make sure you're getting your pasteurization. If you're using heat, to keep it up there for 165 to 170 for at least an hour. Green, bluish molds is confusing to me. I've never seen, I've seen trichoderma, which would be a green mold on straw. But seeing a penicillin or aspergillus mold on straw is would be new to me.
I guess green is accurate.
Okay, well, green.
And it blackens.
Okay, all right, so that's trichoderma. That's a parasite, so that's one you want to be careful with. And take no prisoners. Just get rid of what you have, or you can tape up holes where it looks dominant. And then the spawn, you want to make sure that, you know, do some controls and just pasteurize some media without spawn and poke it and do everything the same and just kind of eliminate the factor. You follow that?
Sure, but consistent pasteurization, because I guess I'm not that consistent. I'm walking away, but controlling that seems like the advice I've been given.
That and cleanliness, and again, shoot a blank on, once you pasteurize it, just bag a little bit of that before you spawn it and watch that bag. And,
okay.
And then if all of your ones you spawn turn green, then it might be your spawn.
Oh. And now I'm thinking that Tony here would benefit from your book, Trad, I think your book appeals. Now, he has quite a bit of experience already, but I still think your book would be useful.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there's beginner to advanced techniques in there. I've given my book to people who are growing for 20, 30 years, and even professors are grabbing the book because there's those little bites of information that can make a world of difference.
Yeah,
you know, and that's worth it. One idea in that book can change your life if you're a farmer.
We have thanks again, Tony, for calling. Harlene in Madison has a comment next. Hi, Harlene. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having this show. It's really interesting. Mine wasn't a question on growing or anything, but I wanted to tell about a tour that I took in Turkey, and out in the middle of Turkey somewhere, we went to a restaurant that apparently they were mushroom growers, and every item on the menu was made from mushrooms. I mean, from the salad to the desserts. All I can remember is how wonderful every item that I had was. So anyway, it was just an interesting place to
wow. That is very cool. They didn't have a website, did they, by any chance, Harlene?
Well, this was maybe 15 years.
Oh, a long time back.
But I do, if I can find it, somewhere, and usually I just travel alone, but this was a tour group, and each day one of us wrote in this booklet, and then everybody had the booklet at the end. I may have the name. I'll look for it, and if so, I'll... let Larry know and
put it up on our Facebook page. Absolutely. Thanks, Arlene. Comment from you, Trad?
Yeah, I was hoping to find what city that is so I can go ahead and book a flight. And it's interesting to see, you know, and I travel a lot here and abroad, that other cultures, how they use mushrooms is there's some are more prized than others, and some are more, you know, we study tropical cultivation, and we go down to Haiti and been to Mexico, and it varies with every culture. And India now is increasing. A lot of countries are increasing their production in mushrooms because it's very inexpensive, and they fruit so quickly that you can provide a lot of protein and sustenance for a community or a civilization in a very short amount of time. So it's a good idea to grow mushrooms anywhere on the planet.
Susan in Milwaukee wondered if you can grow Tibetan mushrooms in the United States.
I'm thinking she's talking about the cordyceps mushrooms. That would be Cordyceps sinensis, which is a mushroom that grows in the high up in the Himalayan mountains. And it's very difficult to grow here because we cannot mimic those conditions, those high elevations. And also, that mushroom grows on a caterpillar larvae specific to that region. Now, we could probably get away with cultivating that in the lab, but we would need the larvae to produce the fruiting bodies. And there are mushrooms that are chemically similar here in the Appalachian Mountains, exclusively here, sometimes out west. But it is a mushroom that stimulates your immune system, has known antiviral, anti-cancer compounds that actually arrest cancer cells, and is worth its weight in gold over there. So it is a highly prized mushroom, but it's very difficult to grow. But you can find some. If you come to the southeast, I know I could show you where some might be.
Very interesting. We had a question from Timothy, who wondered if you can use coffee grounds as a medium for growing mushrooms, and what variety of mushrooms would you suggest for a medium like coffee grounds?
Oh, sure. People have been growing mushrooms on coffee for, I would say, about almost two decades, maybe 15 years, and oyster mushrooms are the clear winner. Oyster mushrooms are a meaty, sweet mushroom. It only takes 3 to 4 weeks to, once you mix the spawn, which is a culture that you would buy into the coffee grounds that you can get from a, you know, from a store. If you leave a bucket, they can fill it up for you. Or you can keep a culture in your fridge and just add a little bit of the culture to your daily coffee ground harvesting, you know, filters and all. You put it in a container, mix in your spawn, and within a few weeks you'll have mushrooms fruiting right there in your kitchen. It's fairly easy.
Oh, man. Doug in Menasha has a question. Hi, Doug.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So I've at my folks' house, I spotted a fungus grown out of a wild black cherry tree. I don't know if that's considered a mushroom or not, but it was rather large, and the distinctive thing about it, it was a very, very bright sort of orangish-yellow color, just one solid color, no striations or anything in it. I was just wondering what that might be.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure. We have our webpage would be Mushroom Mountain, our Facebook. Olga, my wife, does a lot of identification, and she's a big part of this business, and she knows ID very well, and it could be one of anything. Typically, cherry trees, does it have gills or pores underneath? Do you know?
It was really close to the ground, so I couldn't really see it underneath, and it was actually, like, right up against a fence, so there wasn't much chance to see anything other than just the top of it. And it was fairly large. I mean, it was only maybe 3 or 4 inches deep, but it probably had a span across, going around the tree of, I don't know, 12, 14 inches.
If it had pores, it's probably a chicken of the woods strain that we've had some reports fruiting on cherry. And okay. But I would just need to see the top. Just, you know, anyone who wants a mushroom ID'd can send it to a Mushroom Mountain Facebook at you need a picture of the top and the underside, whether it has pores or gills, and we could get a good ID for you.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Sure.
And Joe in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello. I have some old wooden staves from a wooden barrel, and I wondered if I could grow mushrooms on that old oak wood.
Yeah, you totally could. I would probably defer to the oyster mushrooms. So you would soak those pieces of wood overnight in water, or even a couple days, let them almost sink, and then you could sprinkle your spawn and even stack them. Is there a way you could stack them?
Yeah, I could crisscross them, I guess.
Yeah, you could crisscross. The best way you can kind of get them tightly packed together as much as you can, and then you sprinkle your oyster spawn on there and then cover them with a tarp in the shade. You always grow your mushrooms in the shade and then where it's nice and cool, and then that will start to colonize those wood planks, and then you can just keep them misted. It might take 6 months, 8 months, but if you keep your eye on them, they could just erupt with a nice crop of mushrooms that could fruit for years.
Would your book discuss that procedure in detail?
Not using the particular wood type, but it does go into detail in the Meet the Mushrooms chapter. It talks about you know, how you can just spawn different things and recycling and composting.
So you'd have the basic information right there in the book.
Yeah, the biggest, I think, asset to the book would be the first few chapters talking about how mushrooms grow. Mm-hmm. And then all you would need to, once you get inside the mushrooms, I guess, train of thought and how to use spawn, then you really can spawn just about anything.
Where do you get the spawn?
My company sells it. There's Field and Forest. There's Fungi Perfecti. I mean, there's a lot of companies around And I would just get on their websites and, you know, whichever one you're more comfortable with, or call them up. And, you know, we take calls. My wife Olga takes all the calls here. And if you need a step-by-step, you know, if the instructions or the book isn't covering it, you just call me and we'll figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate your call. And let's turn to Deborah in Milwaukee next. Hi, Deborah.
Hi. Yeah. Hi. Okay. Well, I'm in Brown Deer right now, and I was talking with your receptionist or the screener, I didn't hear what the conversation was, but then when she put me on hold, I heard a cherry tree mentioned. So I have one, and it's exactly 21 years old, and it's a Kwanzaa or Kwanzaa cherry, and it's got a fungus on it. But I can't stand to see it dying. But I know the little woodpeckers love it. But I thought fungus is related. How are funguses that grow on trees related to mushrooms? And then I saw these huge white balls. I mean, I know you know who they are, and I first saw them on north of Lake Winnebago, right in back of someone's house on the lake. And then I've seen them in a park that shall not be mentioned. And I went back to take pictures of them, and they were gone. So I wonder if they deflate and die, or do people pick them?
Well, yeah, it sounds like the larger white ones could be lion's mane, which is I don't blame anyone for taking them, because they taste like lobster and crab meat.
Yeah.
And I mark my trees. Olga and I go out every fall, and we drive around, and we collect them. But, you know, down here, a lot of people don't know what they are. And if you're in a remote area, you can let them, you know, get a little bit bigger and slice them off. But that's called a lion's mane. It's a fluffy white mushroom with these little, like these soft velvety spines. And they'll come back on the same trees every year. But, you know, things that are killing your tree could be something totally different. It might be a pathogen or a bacterial blight. And the best thing to do in that case would be to take samples, pictures and samples of leaves and, you know, blistering bark to your extension office there, you know.
There you go. Thank you, Deborah, for calling. Appreciate it. I had a Facebook question that you address in your book, actually. It has to do with cultivating morel mushrooms. What are the factors that prohibit us from cultivating morels? And I know you're working on solutions.
Yeah, and this has been a fail-forward situation, you know, where, like a lot of things in the lab and outdoors, where morels are a very unique organism, and Dr. Tom Volk cracked the life cycle, you could say, by understanding more about them, and I'll credit him in the book for that. What we're trying to do is just take it a step further and figure out what are the environmental factors and cues that will, you know, help this mushroom fruit. Morels, if no one knows what those are these spongy little mushrooms that grow on the ground every spring, and they only fruit in any given spot for about 3 weeks out of the whole year. And they can have a price tag of $60 to $100 a pound. So their interest in commercial cultivation is very high, but their interest in fruiting for anyone is low. So what we're doing here is planting outdoor beds, and we've had some very good luck with our native cultures down here, because they grow around certain trees. And yep. If everyone who hunts these mushrooms knows that they actually go looking for the trees first, and then they'll find the mushrooms or potentially this group of mushrooms. So we're now understanding that morels are predatory on specific bacteria that live with specific host trees. So we're trying to remove the tree from the equation and just cultivate the bacteria and the mushroom together so they can fruit together in these little beds that we make outdoors. And hopefully that'll lead to being able to fruit them indoors. So there has been some, I think, some very good achievements in the lab inside and out. But the outdoor method is showing very, very strong results. And I would encourage anyone who's, you know, getting cultures, you know, growing oyster mushrooms and shiitake are different. So in the book I describe, well, you may not want to buy the spawn from me because it won't work. You know, you should culture some mushrooms up from your area because they're very specific to every area, you know. It's not a mushroom that just likes to be tame, and it varies from bioregion to bioregion. So I actually encourage, and it shows you, tells you exactly how to make a morel culture if you find one from your area, like using a mason jar, and it's a very low-tech method.
I have looked at that with great interest, yep. That part of your book. And, here we are out of time. Trav, this has been a wonderful talking with you. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. I'd really love to have you back.
Sure. There's so much to talk about. Just let me know, and I look forward to seeing everybody out at the fair. Come and say hi, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much. Again, Trav Cotter is author of Organic Mushroom Farming and Mycoremediation. And he's going to be at the Mother Earth News Fair in West Bend, Wisconsin, this weekend, as a matter of fact, August 8th and 9th. And so go to the Mother Earth News Fair website. You can find out some more about the specifics of when he's going to be appearing. Lots going on at that fair. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.